Around the early part of 1964, we had an on-the-air microphone that was called an RCA 77DX. It was a standard-type microphone that a lot of radio stations used back then. In fact, our production room had the very same type in it. One evening while I was working the sign-off shift, there was one particular commercial that we were running that had a very loud sound effect of a crash toward the end of the commercial. And for some reason, that commercial stuck in my mind. The control and production room, along with three other rooms, were located on the same second-story floor. Next to the entrance to one of the rooms were a dozen or so of bricks. Not full bricks, but half-broken bricks. Now, the station was located in a building back then called the Dock Street Theater Building. There was an area that was used by the patrons of the theater during intermissions, where they went outside in an area that had been covered with these bricks, sort of like a large patio. Apparently, one of our employees looked out a window one day and saw a very large stack of these bricks and decided to help relocate a few. Not the good bricks, but the ones that were broken in half. For what reason is still unknown to me. After seeing these bricks, my mind started weaving together an idea that was really weird. I wondered how it would sound on the air if two of these bricks were crashed together in front of a microphone at the same time that the loud crashing sound effect sounded at the end of that one particular commercial I was thinking about. So what I did was go back to the brick pile and bring back a couple of the broken bricks. I then put a reel of tape on a recording machine in the production room, connected the program line out from the control room into the recorder, because what I had planned to do was to play that commercial in the next few minutes and at one precise moment crash those bricks together and have the whole thing recorded on tape. Then let the salesman, whose account that was, listen and see if he'd like to run the commercial that way. It was just a few minutes before midnight, sign-off time, and I had only one more commercial to run, the one that I was going to add something to. But I wanted to make certain that I had enough blank space before and after the commercial so that I could lift it out cleanly. Well, it came time to run that spot. So after I started the recorder in the production room, I then started the commercial. It was playing. My heart was pounding. I turned the volume control for my microphone down to zero, turned on the mic, and then slowly turned the microphone volume up to a little less than usual. I quietly picked up the bricks and slowly rehearsed, bringing them together underneath the microphone, back and forth, back and forth. It was just seconds away before I needed to crash them together, then quickly fade the microphone volume, and after a second of silence, start a record. Back in the days when people sat around the radio listening to radio shows, for some reason they liked to watch the radio. I guess it sounded better. Now here I am, about to crash two bricks together under a microphone, and I slowly turn my head to the left, where the commercial is playing on a machine there. After just a few seconds, the bricks seem to get a little heavier, so I compensate by lifting them up just a little bit more. Now it's time to add my own crash and bring the bricks together, not knowing now that the microphone is right in the middle between the two bricks. I smash them into the microphone. Oh, I whip my head back to the right and I see what I've done. I turn the microphone off, and after a second after the commercial ends, I start my next record. I look at the microphone, and after doing a little wiping and cleaning, it doesn't look too bad. I turn the microphone volume back to zero again and listen very carefully on my headphones and slowly bring the microphone volume up a little bit. I then take a pencil and start to gently tap the microphone along with the beat of the music. I hear nothing. I bring the volume up some more. Nothing yet. More. Nothing. All the way up. By then, all I hear is a slight buzz in the background. Ah! I had killed the microphone. What the heck do I do now? For the final few minutes, all I do is play jingles and music. Now it's time for the sign-off. I start it. It ends. I turn the transmitter off. I sit down in front of a dead microphone. The sign-on guy, Doug Randall, will be there in about 5 or so hours. I pick up the phone and I call our engineer, Harold Kramer. He answers the phone.
Hello?
Harold, for some reason the control room microphone stopped working a little while ago.
Must have been a power surge. It probably blew one of the tubes in the control board.
This was a few years before solid-state equipment. Yeah, Harold, what do I do?
Just stay there. I'll be there soon.
Each minute that went by seemed like an hour. Finally, around 3 a.m, I could hear the downstairs office door open and close and footsteps coming up the stairs into the control area. Harold walks in, moves me aside. At that time, our headphone monitor was connected right to the program line and not to an off-the-air receiver. He puts on the headphones, turns on the microphone, and proceeds to test the microphone.
Test, test. Hello, hello, test, test. All I hear is a hum. Must be a bad tube.
Well, Harold, do you need me anymore?
Yeah, don't go yet.
My heart sunk. Together, we moved a sheet of plywood that was on top of the control board so that he could get to the inside of it. Harold unplugs a tube and replaces it with another one already in a box inside the control board. After a few seconds, it lights up. He puts the headphones on again.
Test, test, hello, hello.
No change. Harold looks at me and asks,
"You don't have any idea why this microphone doesn't work, do you?"
No, Harold, no.
Oh.
Harold then makes certain that it's connected up properly, but still, no change. I suggest, Harold, maybe one of the wires is shorted or open. Okay, we'll see. Harold takes a small screwdriver and unscrews two screws located on each side of the microphone, then slowly slides the cover off. And there it is, the problem. The main element that picks up sound and converts to electrical audio impulses is a small strip of magnesium that looks like a small ribbon of metal. It's held in place at each end by a little solder onto a board located underneath a very powerful permanent magnet. In fact, sometimes the guys would get bored and see how many gym clips they could stick to an end on end. Harold realizes that all he's got to do is to re-solder the end that somehow came off. He pulls a soldering iron out of his bag and plugs it in. After a few minutes, it's ready to do its thing. But that very strong magnet has other ideas. Every time Harold gets the soldering iron near the mic, plunk, it grabs the soldering iron. Harold tries this position, plunk, that position, plunk, over here, plunk, over there, plunk. But each time, when he's just about ready to solder it back to health, plunk, the magnet grabs the soldering iron. This is not going to work. You stay here. I'll be back in a while. Another piece of equipment we had back then was called the singing clock. Every minute of every hour was on a very large tape cartridge. But you heard the same musical jingle at 7:15 in the morning and 7:15 in the evening, which meant it was a 12-hour recording. Now, if you didn't play the recording on the air for that particular minute, it would automatically update itself for the next minute, and you'd have to wait a few minutes if you wanted to use it. So, for the next couple of hours, I listened while the clock mechanically updated itself minute by minute, listening to a set of gears clicking and popping, and also watching this Western Union clock that we used to tell time by reset itself every hour on the hour with a light and a loud hum. I finally heard the familiar sound once again of the front door opening and closing and footsteps up those concrete stairs. It's now 5:25 a.m. Harold comes in and says, "I was going to replace this microphone a few months anyway. Now's as good a time as ever." Eventually, Harold replaces the mystery microphone with the new one. He tests it out. Everything's okay. We both leave, but Harold is parked in the opposite direction of where I'm parked. I walk down Church Street toward Queen. I just about get to Queen when I hear the familiar sound of a car door open. I peek around the corner. It's still a little dark, but I now see Doug Randall walking toward me. Right next to Queen Street, near the Dock Street Theater, is an entrance area for apartments upstairs. I quickly step into the hallway. Doug walks past me. He didn't see me. I'm home free. I put my ear out the door frame and listen for the front door to close. I step out in the early morning air, realizing that I got away with it. Now to the car. Oh, there's the car. I reach into my pocket for the keys. They're not there. Next to the control board is a wooden carousel holder for our commercials that's about a foot and a half high. A lot of the guys take everything out of their pockets before they sit down and get to work and place everything on top of the carousel. Now I remember where my keys are. How am I going to explain this to Doug? I've got to get those keys. Well, I slowly walk back. And I have an idea. I ring the front doorbell, which lights up a light bulb upstairs as seen by anyone in the control room or the production room. A few seconds goes by, and I hear the upstairs control room window slide up, and a familiar voice call out, "Yeah, who's down there? What do you want?" "Hey, Doug, it's me." "Diamond, what the hell are you doing here?" "Well, me and some guys stayed up all night at a party that was nearby, and I was going home, and I can't find my key. Did I leave my keys on top of the carousel last night?" "Wait a minute." Doug goes back into the control room. A few seconds later, out pops his head. "These yours?" "Yeah, here, catch." "Ah, thanks, Doug. You have a good show. See you later, bye." Doug closed the window, and that was the longest night I will never forget.